certify that the meeting has been properly noted?
Yes, ma'am.
Do I have a motion to accept the certification?
So moved.
Second.
Motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All right, the agenda's approved. Motion to approve the minutes of the April meeting. I was not here.
Me neither.
So it's going to be delayed until the next meeting. Have there been any communication with the board?
I guess.
Mark Stewart, Stone County Planning and Zoning Director. There is one communication, and it's the Prop versus Stone County Board of Adjustment case that went before the Court of Appeals, and Stone County appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has decided to not take that case. So, because it's a published decision by the Court of Appeals, that makes case law. Yes. That's
great. For those of you in the audience, if you wish to speak today, please find one of the folks in the back of the room and bring it up to Dave Lorenz. David here, representing the Planning and Zoning Office. Gina Templin, our reporter. My name is Linda White. Next to me is Dave Winnicky and David Allen. We do have a quorum for the board this morning, even though we have two members missing. The way that this will go is we'll ask applicants to come forward and ask, we'll have the board, or the Planning and Zoning Office will present the case, and then the applicant will come forward, those for, then those against, and those who wish to appear as may. We'll put a second request up in case there are other questions that come up. And then we'll have our deliberation, and we'll make our final decision on that. So the first case today is on my agenda for the order. Going to be SP 1010.
I do. Dave Lorenz, Sauk County Planning and Zoning. This is a request for a special exception permit to authorize the location and operation of four mineral extraction sites. The plans call for removal of existing sand and then to return the properties to agricultural fields when completed. The property has been rezoned to the agricultural district by the county board for this purpose. The property is located in the agricultural zoning district on real estate described as part of sections 2 and 35, town 8 north, range 4 east, and town 9 north, range 3 east, in the town of Spring Green. lands surrounding the sites are all zoned Resource Conservancy District 35. There are no land use permits or septic permits found issued to these properties. There are no previous appeals to the Board of Adjustment, and no citations have been issued. Facts of the case, when reviewing a special exception proposal and change in land use, the Board of Adjustment looks at several criteria, including promoting public health, safety, and general welfare, whether there are constraints to development and impacts to the surrounding properties, and if the proposed use is consistent with the local and county department plans and codes. Section 7.05, parent 2, parent L19 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for mineral extraction activities. Surrounding properties to the north is agricultural properties and limited residential uses. To the east are a few residential properties located near the southeast portion of one of the sites. To the west is agricultural properties and two residences. To the south are agricultural and limited residential properties. There is no indicated floodplain in this parcel. Panel maps 550391-0630, the effective date, or the date that the county adopted these new maps, is December 15 of 09. There are no wetlands located within these properties. If I could direct the board to take a look at the photographs, the exhibits 5, 1, and 2. Photo number 1 is taken from the southeast corner of parcel number 2. The parcels are numbered, those are indicated on exhibit 2-5. So this was just off of Pearl Road. That's looking to the northwest. Parcel number, or photo number 2, that's looking to the northwest across parcel 4. This would be on the south side of Highway G. The only activity that's going to happen on parcel 4 is will be the sand will be stockpiled there to then be shipped out. Photo number 3 is taken from the northwest corner of parcel 1, looking to the southeast from Big Hollow Road. Photo 4 is a view to the east across parcel 3, taken from Highway G. And now we'll see if we can start the video.
I have the pleasure of having the first time ever of using screens or anything.
Taken from the east, southeast corner of parcel 2, look to the west, other agricultural properties, south, towards Highway 14, at Pearl Road, there is a existing dog kennel right there just west. This is taken looking across parcel 4 where the sand was stockpiled from Highway 8, south 1, and this area of parcel 3 is going to find north side of
will help the possible flooding?
I believe that they're talking about it every period. Freaking freak out, Mark. And this is the operator for getting open. This is taken from Big Hollow Road, looking to the southeast area behind the cell. North. Cultural properties, and this is taken from highways looking to the east. Across Park Street, North on D, at agricultural property, west. South. The town of Spring Green has submitted a list that was forwarded to the board of conditions to consider imposing on this property for this request. Planning and zoning would recommend the following conditions be considered by the board should the board grant the special exception permit. A, that all work on and use of the premises shall proceed with the plans and supplemental evidence presented at the hearing. And it is the responsibility of the applicant to secure all required town, state, federal, and county permits within 1 year of the hearing date. County permits required for this approval include a land use permit. The permit shall remain in effect for 5 years and may be renewed by the board at that time. The permit shall not be transferable. D, all temporary access roads as well as permanent all-weather roads on-site shall be maintained in a manner as to eliminate off-site erosion. E, a reclamation plan shall be submitted to and approved by Sauk County Planning and Zoning prior to operation. F, the financial assurance shall be submitted to the Planning and Zoning at a rate of $1,500 an acre. Operation shall not commence until this is on file. D, the permit boundaries of the site shall be clearly posted with no trespassing signs. H, Sauk County Planning and Zoning shall be granted permission to view the site to ensure compliance with these conditions and other relevant provisions of the Sauk County codes. I, within reasonable time after the Planning and Zoning Office is aware of any violations, it will provide a written notice to Dale Clark specifying the nature of the violation and the action necessary to correct the violation. The second notice of violation for a specific item, or the fourth notice of all overall violation of any nature, would cause a suspension of the permit. The suspension would be in effect until the violation is corrected to the satisfaction of the Office of Planning and Zoning, and an application is submitted to the Board of Adjustment for a new or revised permit.
I'm a little confused.
You have to be the right one right there.
Yeah, there. Revised.
Revised.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Right.
should be the revised staff report.
Up on the top.
There were some additional information provided and some corrections needed to be made.
In this, we say plans for insurance as opposed to bonding. What do you mean by saying this?
A bond. That's the same thing as bonding.
And that's so that the reclamation takes place?
Correct.
Different wording of this.
Has the planning and zoning office, you, been in contact with the town about this plan? Sounds like the town has some...
The only control... I have not personally been in contact with the town. The only thing we have received from the town is what has been presented to the board.
Okay. Will the applicant please step forward? Swear to tell the truth to the best of your ability?
I do.
My
name is Dale Clark, and I live at 8467 Arbor Trace Drive in Verona, Wisconsin. I have to say today that I agree with the conditions as just stated by planning and zoning. I work pretty closely with the Town Planning Commission and the Town Board on this, as well as Jewel Associates, who is working on the town drainage project. And everything kind of dovetails, and I tried to be a good citizen and a good neighbor. And I think I have a plan now that really doesn't have any disadvantages for anybody, and substantial advantages for myself and my neighbors and my community and everybody else I can think of. So.
What property do you own?
It is. Myself and my wife, Judith.
Approximately how many marriage materials do you think will be doing this for
them? I'm not sure. The first stage, the critical stage for the flood thing, looks like maybe 150,000, but the rest of it will depend on the market. The deposits north of the road, that's going to be a long time in the future because that is the less advantageous in terms of dealing with the water problem. What really kind of motivated me to get started on this is I'm the only farmer that lost two complete growing seasons to the disastrous flood. And this ridge that I want to remove prevents any drainage out of that site. The water gets into that bowl and just sits there until it eventually goes away. And that's happened so much over the years that the soil in some areas is a little impermeable because all of the silt that came down over time. So it's probably one of the best fields around before irrigation because it would actually hold some water. Now it holds a little bit too much water. And so to remove the sand in question and tie that in with what will be an outlet once the drainage plan is dovetailed makes it a much better field. Makes it much more farmable. My goal is to keep it in farming forever. My plan at this stage in time is I'm essentially doing three projects. I'm doing them in small stages so to not disrupt the crop sequence. My personal plan is when I get done with parcel number one is to put it back into RC35. Same way with two. Same way with three. So, this seems like a big project, but I'm doing it in small sequences, and it will depend on weather and crop sequence, and it will depend on the market. If I move a lot off of one into stockpile, and the economy doesn't pick up, it may be a while before I go any farther because I'm going to have to work down that stockpile on 4. I'm limited by how much I can store there. I don't want big stockpiles. We're trying to take all kinds of preventive measures to keep any windblown erosion from blowing that out on the G. And so I really can't give you a better answer as to how much I'll eventually remove. When you look at the pictures, it's hard to even see a hill out there. Like in parcel 2, you know, the hill is maybe 4 foot high. You know, it's right in the middle of the field, and there's maybe a smaller one. So on the property south of the road, when I'm done, particularly when there's crops growing out there, if you took before and after pictures, I don't think anybody is really going to notice any difference. It's going to look the same. It's going to look like an irrigated crop field.
Do you have a long-term contract?
I do.
Just some specific questions.
Of course.
On parcel number 1, the sort of the finished plan you have on the sort of the northern border of what you're working on, you leave a looks like about a 2-foot berm.
Are we southern border? Southern border or northern?
Northern. I'm looking at
the
berm
okay,
along
there.
Here. I'm just wondering if you're trying to have this field level. That's your ultimate objective. What is that for, and does that tie in with the drainage?
I'll try to answer that. I might have to refer that to Greg Jewell. My understanding of that detail is we're capturing the water where it flows across the intersection of Big Hollow and G. We're trying to capture it before it gets out into my middle of my field. There's several things that are happening. Obviously, there's a subsurface water issue that's affecting the whole valley, and this really doesn't address that. But there's a couple of surface water issues. There's the surface water issue that will put water into my field after an inch and a half rain because it comes unrestricted down Big Hollow, and so that can happen all the time. Then there's the big issue where you get the monumental, the 200-year rains in a row, and they're coming down there. So my idea of what that is some way of catching it at the source as it's coming into my property, because apparently it's not a problem for anybody when it's in Big Hollow Road, but as soon as it crosses the road, now I got a problem. If we catch it there and that size wide enough with a berm to the north also, those 2-inch rains are not going to spill into my field. They're going to follow the diversion into the town ditch. The monumental ones that are going to come down faster, that berm is probably going to have some notches or a decrease in elevation as it moves into my field. There would be a rainfall event that would overtop that berm, go into my field, and then would come out slowly. Because the field will be an integral part. It'll be essentially the storage area, the detention basin. But I only got 2 or 3 days before I have crop damage, so it's got to drain pretty quickly, and I don't want 2 or 3 days every month. I think what the berm is about. I think that berm is to separate the big event from the real common event.
So your irrigation equipment could go right over that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be beyond the last wheel. So the wheel will be on the flat, and then it's shooting.
Okay.
I think there's no conflict with the irrigation system.
And then, one of the clear differences that pointed out with your plan on the town of Spring Green is that their goal of not having material extracted closer than 4 feet from the groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
You said that in terms of the swale is where you start to get down to that level.
Yeah.
Have you discussed that your plan more closely with the town? Discuss that difference and how you might resolve that?
Briefly, but I need to have some more. It's essentially the bottom area of that swale. It's going to be in the part that's going to be part of the town drainage system. And so that's what's dictating that elevation. So in a sense, it's not really my problem. You know, that has to be that certain level. I mean, the elevation where we start and the elevation where we end up is pretty dictated, and the slope is pretty flat over that couple miles. So, you know, we have to do pretty much what the engineering tells us to, and there's a lot of, kindest word is uncertainty, about where the water level actually is at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have some pretty good testing, and my neighbors have done some holes, and you know, at a specific date that should have been representative, we're well above it. And we'll be well above it on all of the crop areas, and the upper part of that swale as it's coming down on a very high, on a real wet spring. Well, geez, the water table's above the ground. You know, in August, it's, in a lot of years, as near as I can tell, the water table's 20 feet down. You know, so it's, I think it's a non-issue, but I am talking to the people of the town, and you know, obviously I'm talking to Greg Jewell here. He's keenly aware of that, because we have to, one of the conditions that the town wanted for the zoning changes is they wanted to be absolutely sure that what I did enhanced what they're going to do and not detracted from it. You know, if I did something that killed the drainage thing, it would be a disaster for everybody concerned. So I think the elevation thing is okay. I think they understand that I'm not violating the spirit of anything, but what they don't want to do, the motivation for this is one of the board members is personally dealing with some quarry operations where they're digging down below the water table, and they're doing constant dewatering to dig the sand up. And so that was very fresh in his mind, and even though my situation isn't that sort of situation, that's how that discussion essentially started. And then from there it went to, well, where is the water table? Can we just pick an elevation and say we don't go below that? There was some discussion that we don't pick an elevation. Here we pick 724, you know, on that main field, because we needed to drain into 722 at where the ditch is going to be, you know, making the bend to go south. Yeah, so we can't very well dig a hole and come out and measure it to see if we're 4 feet from the water every time we're digging a hole, because that doesn't give us a predictable design solution to work with the drainage district. You know, it has to be pretty much based on an elevation. So we picked the elevation that clearly gives us quite a spread from where we can, well, what testing, what data we have to say where the water table is.
And then is it your sense that the groundwater flow in this area flows towards the village of Spring Green? In terms of the
groundwater?
Yeah.
Actually, I think groundwater goes south to the river more than east to Spring Green. But I don't know that. I'm not a hydrogeologist. I know in the flood situation, because of that berm that I want to remove,
mm-hmm.
the surface water came down onto my land, definitely hit that berm and went straight east, flooded Jerry Bindles, and went to Spring Green, and then pretty much came back and went south to the river. But I know surface water goes that way. I'm not sure that groundwater does. I'm thinking that's probably going to take shortest route, and it's going to go south of the river.
And then a question on parcel 3, which you did say, you know, it's going to be a while before you get to that.
Yeah.
I noticed that there are no final grade sections provided for that. You do have some elevations on the reclamation plan. And I guess the question I have for you is, and maybe the engineer you're working with can answer this more directly, but it looks like you're leaving about a 12-foot drop on a material that's sand, credible, and I'm just wondering if you can comment or your engineer can comment on whether the engineering qualities of that soil hold that. I mean, you're just pushing it right up against and close to a neighboring properties as well.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about erosion and how that would...
I'll give it a shot, and then I think I will turn that over to my engineer just to kind of complete it. My understanding, and I may be wrong, you may correct me here, is we're going to come out a minimum of 50 feet from the boundary line before we do anything. vent, assuming it's 12 feet, that will be reclaimed at a 3-to-1 slope. That will be, we're going to use kind of a mix of seeds that the Sauk County conservationists can come up with. I would like to kind of match. On that bank, there's a couple V-shaped areas where I have three irrigation systems. And they're kind of in a native vegetation that obviously holds the soil pretty well. And, you know, I'd like it to sort of look the same. Obviously, I'm not going to plant Kentucky bluegrass up there or something like that. But I think at a 3-to-1 with some kind of good seeding technique, like netting or mulching or hydro seeding or, you know, whatever is determined to be adequate, I think we can come up with a seed mix to get a stand on that at a 3-to-1.
Okay, do it.
Yes.
You'll have a chance.
Yeah. I'll leave my contractors.
Do you have any comments or questions that were asked for by the township?
The only one we talked about then is it says limit stockpile size. There's no practical way of really doing that because, you know, coming off the ends of the screens, they're going to be like 25 feet high. We talked about that. There's going to be some pretty big piles of sand out there when they start digging the ditch. So there was some hesitancy on some members of the town board to try to limit that because that sets a precedent for other things. There was some discussion about the fact that at the stockpile point, I haven't moved any dirt off my field, and obviously when it blows in the spring, sand blows on the fields. I've seen it, you know, everybody knows that. So to address that point, we started talking about what the root problem is. The root problem is nobody wants to see sand blowing across County Road G obstructing visibility. So somebody suggested that I put some berms around there. Somebody else suggested some snow fence. Somebody else suggested some cedar trees planted on the top, all of which I agreed to, which got put into the reclamation plan. So what we did is I would like to change the wording of that particular one from limit stockpile size to manage stockpiles to control erosion or something, because I think that's what we've done. We've come up with everything that we can think of so far, and we probably will keep them as low as possible. All of the other conditions, the hours of operation, the water table thing, well, that's the last one. That one I thought would be an issue because we couldn't define where it is, but we picked the engineering elevation that the land in question, all except for the bottom part of that waterway, is going to be 4 foot or more above the water level. So I have no problem with the town things except limiting the stockpile size, and there's no practical way I can see of really doing that. So I think I'd, here again, searching for the spirit rather than the letter that I don't have.
I mean, it sounds like maybe with the stockpile size, did the town have a particular size that they were talking about?
No, nobody got that far. All they were concerned about is not blowing on
deep.
Yeah.
And your plan already is to their satisfaction?
Yes. The other big issue at the township level was protecting the neighbors from any water. And so we have the berms and the ditches and the engineering, and, you know, I'm leaving the trees in the dry corners. And so should be no impact at all on my neighbors.
How is it when you're about the question?
The nearest one would be Jerry Bindles, and that's got to be more than a quarter, maybe 3/8 of a mile, a long ways, and he is in support of it. So he's not here today, but he's been at all my other meetings.
I had a couple questions, but they've already been addressed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Anyone else in favor would like to appear? Swear to tell the truth to the best of your ability?
I do.
Impressed record.
Greg Jewell, Jewell Associate Engineers, 560 Sunrise Drive, Spring Green, Wisconsin. Well, I'm here more to answer questions for the board here. We represent the drainage district, and we're working on that plan to take this water. Mr. Clark's property is an integral part of this because it acts as our retainage area for the entire project. The work he's doing basically increases the size of our basin. So the bathtub's gotten a little bigger, and over time it's released out slowly through the ditch system to the river. The comment you made about the little berm is true. That was designed so that it takes the low flows. We can keep it more controlled and right to the drainage system, and it doesn't go and spread out over his field. In higher events, it will inundate his whole field. The size of the stockpile, the town's concern with that was blowing. And it was the limit word, maybe not the proper word, but it was, we'll monitor it, we'll look at it, if it's a problem, it's going to have to be addressed. But kind of how, my understanding, how it was left. The timing fits real good. We feel that the drainage project is going to hopefully be approved with EDA funds this coming month. I know I've said in the past it's always another month, but it takes a while, I guess. But, you know, we're looking at starting construction, hopefully next summer on the drainage part of it. Well, this ties in really well with that. We helped prepare this plan for Mr. Clark so that we're assuring the township that the grades match, the drainage will work, and we can assure that that will happen. We'll be monitoring the activity that's going out there, too, to make sure it's going to work on behalf of the town.
So the, are you aware of the groundwater flow as well?
Yes.
Does it go to the village?
The groundwater actually goes towards the river.
Okay, so it's more south than the direct road. And then as far as the, on that parcel 3, it just seemed to me that, it's already a fairly steep slope, but it's not disturbed. And so I'm just wondering about, it seems like a pretty steep final grade for that type of soil. Does it have the engineering qualities to hold together, assuming you can get something to take on it? This doesn't sound like it would be a challenge to reestablish vegetation as well.
I guess historically through the valley, the 3-to-1 slope has worked well for us. It has to have a topsoil and a good cover crop on top of it to hold it. And so if it's done right with the right topsoil and seed, like Mr. Clark stated, it should work. It's worked in other parts of the valley.
Okay, with the same kind of soil type?
Correct.
And then there was, in the plans, there were no final grade sections for parcel 3. Was that just something you hadn't gotten to? Or?
Right. There's a note on there that it's all 3-to-1 slopes would be the maximum slope. So
okay.
Pretty much the contour map was what we were going at as far as
sure.
Addressing that.
Anyone else in favor? Anyone opposed? Anyone in favor? One in any of the three categories. Swear to tell the truth?
Yes.
Joel
Bauer,
E4097 Highway B. Well, if I was on to that planning commission meeting in Spring Green, and if that ditch don't go in, I don't want that water. They're going to divert that water someplace. I don't want them to divert that water into our property. You know, if that ditch don't go in, that's what's going to happen. They're going to divert it right into ours. Because right now, over the years, there's like a 10 to 12 foot sand bank they took to the property line. And if they take out 8 to 10 feet of sand, that water's going to come right to our property. And if that ditch don't go in, I think that's going to happen.
With regard to the ditch, is that something the town is
going to do? If they get the money for that flood plain, so the water goes to the river. But if it don't, the water's going to, it ain't going to go towards Pearl Road anymore. It's going to come right down just a little bit east of Big Hollow Road. And about 200 yards off Big Hollow Road, it's going to come through ours and go down right along Big Hollow Road and then go to Lone Rock the way it did last time. It's just going to take a shortcut.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm
so your property is immediately south of that purple one?
Yes. It's to the west, right along Big Hollow Road. Mm-hmm. Where it's right below them, that trees on that corner. I mean, because if they do that, you know, 1 or 2 inch rain, and they do that ditch there, I mean, they're going to run the water someplace. Where is it going to run to if that other ditch don't go in?
Have you seen that plan?
No. I just, what they just had here today.
Yeah. So it looks like along the, I'm not quite sure the elevation right at your property, but it's,
like that east one west line fence there, right by ours, where they took that sand out of Sprecher's field, is the lowest point in that field right now.
Anyone would like to appear?
Greg Jewell, two associates. Just to respond to Joe, he did listen at the Plan Commission meeting when he brought this up. The plan presented at the Plan Commission meeting was lowering it right up to the property line, but now we stayed 50 feet off of the south property line. And we left the trees intact. So that's all natural all the way across. The only way that berm or that existing elevation on that south line will change is if the drainage project takes place. Otherwise, that water is going to sit on Dale Clark's property just like it is today. We did take into account concerns to the south, and we moved everything north and left that natural ground. So we're not touching that between Mr. Clark's property and the south.
So what you're suggesting is if this project is approved, that the swale that you're proposing, which has an elevation of about, looks like 721 or even 720 as you get further east, will take small rain events and divert them to the east.
Correct.
Sort of, and it looks like, I don't have a plat map to find ownership, but it looks like to the east of your property. But the elevation is that in that 50 foot buffer, that elevation is still pretty flat at 724. It stays
down
right
towards
there.
The ditch to the east part. It does, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little higher as we go west, but
so we're talking about a probably a 3 foot difference, and that's sufficient to stay
right.
Small. I mean, you can't deal with large rain events
no.
Either way, but.
Anyone else that's up here? Right, with that, we will close the public part of the hearing and go into deliberation. Sounds like we're going both ways.
Yeah, I'd move that we approve this
special exception permit, using not only planning and zoning recommendations, but the Town of Spring Green's recommendations.
I would like to they shall not divert any water onto any of their properties.
Sure.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Further discussion? Any further discussion?
No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Yes. The motion passes. You'll receive a letter from Planning and Zoning with the details. The next case.
Hey, Lorenz, Sauk County Planning and Zoning. The operator is requesting a special exception permit to authorize the modification of the hours of operation. This request was spurred by a series of events that led the operator to believe that the current hours of operation do not suit the mine operation. The Office of Planning and Zoning received a written complaint in March of 2010 that the quarry had been operated two times before the approved hours of operation. Planning and Zoning notified the operator that the quarry was in violation of their permit conditions, which led to the suspension of the permit. The operator complained that the mine operation was not given the opportunity to correct the problem. Planning and Zoning reversed its decision and viewed the two separate events as one violation, and this allowed the mine operator to remain open. The operator decided the current hours of operation were unsuitable for his business and is requesting that the hours of operation be broadened. The property is located in the Agricultural Zoning District on real estate described as E3843 County Road B, part of the south half of the southeast quarter and the southeast quarter of the southwest quarter, section 15, and part of the northwest quarter of the northeast quarter and the northeast quarter of the northwest quarter, section 22, pound 9 north, range 3 east, town of Bear Creek. Lands surrounding the site are all zoned agricultural. There were no land use permits or septic permits found on this property. We have a previous special exception permit issued in 08 by the Board of Adjustment for the mineral extraction operation, and no citations have been issued at this time. Facts of the case. Reviewing a special exception proposal and change in land use, the Board of Adjustment looks at several criteria, including promoting public health, safety, and general welfare, and whether there are constraints to development and impacts to surrounding properties, and if the proposed use is consistent with local and county development plans and codes. The Sauk County Comprehensive Plan states that one of the infrastructure objectives is to ensure that local supplies of construction aggregates are available for local projects. The town plan of Bear Creek calls for the identification of roads in poor conditions to improve their composition to provide durable roads for current and projected traffic. Section 7.05, parent 2, parent L 19 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for mineral extraction activities. neighboring properties to the north. We have agricultural property and limited residential uses. To the south, there's agricultural properties and two residences. To the east is agricultural properties and a couple of residences. And to the west is agricultural property and one residence. There are no floodplains indicated in this parcel. There are no wetlands indicated in this project area. I'd like to direct the board to take a look at the photographs, the exhibits, Exhibits 5, one, and two. The first photograph is the entrance to the quarry on the south side of at E3843 Highway B. Photo 2 is the active area of the quarry. This would be looking to the southeast. This would be near the entrance to the active area. Photo 3, that's looking to the southwest from the northeast corner of the quarry. And photo 4 is taken from the west side of the quarry, looking to the east. And if we could start the video, please. Entrance to the quarry at Highway B, there's an existing lockable gate there, looking to the west. Existing residence on the other side of Highway B. Entrance to the quarry on the west, north side, active area, south, north. And it's looking north toward Highway E. Can't see the active area of this quarry and any of the surrounding properties. Up on a hill in the surrounding area. Wall with south. Town of Bear Creek has not, at this time, submitted a list of conditions for the board to consider for imposing for this request. Planning and Zoning would recommend that the following conditions be considered by the board should the special exception permit be approved. A, that the permit shall be limited to a period of 5 years from the date of approval of SP 3008, and the applicant may apply for a renewed permit at that time with the Board of Adjustment. Planning and Zoning shall be granted permission to inspect the operation on an unscheduled and unannounced basis. Number 3, that a bond posted for $1,500 per acre disturbed shall be in effect prior to commencement of operation. alternatives to the bond will be considered. The acres to be disturbed will be jointly set by the Office of Planning and Zoning and in the Bauer Limestone and adjusted annually. And this will be the amount of the bond necessary for the coming year. Core measures will be used to reduce dust and watering equipment will be used during crushing and or loading when conditions warrant it. Air quality shall be maintained to conform with state standards. If it is determined there is a need for further testing, then the Bauer Limestone will, at their expense, bring in the needed equipment to test for possible air quality violations. 5, water quality will be addressed to meet state standards. This will be done through the use of settling ponds, grass waterways, or other means deemed necessary by the Planning and Zoning Office. Fencing will only be necessary if Sauk County Planning and Zoning deems a health or safety hazard has been created. Permit boundaries of the quarry shall be clearly posted with no trespassing signs. 7, an undeveloped buffer zone of 50 feet shall be established between all property lines of adjacent landowners and part of the quarry operation. A buffer zone of 600 feet shall be established from an existing residential structure other than the structures owned by Bindle Bauer Limestone or Frederick Linz. The 50 and 600 foot buffer zones may be waived upon release of adjacent property owners, and the waiver shall be provided to Planning and Zoning. 8, an agreement from Bindle Bauer Limestone and the Town of Bear Creek shall be reached on road maintenance of the town roads involved. This would include an inventory of existing conditions and what is expected if both parties of both parties and one copy filed with the Office of Planning and Zoning. If the town deems this unnecessary, a letter from the Town of Planning and Zoning should address this issue. And the Bauer Limestone will provide the letter to Planning and Zoning within 30 days of the board's decision. Hours of operation shall be as follows. Aggregate extraction, processing, trucking, and maintenance. Crushing and processing, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Loading and trucking, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Blasting, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. And maintenance, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The applicant shall use strobe lights for nighttime operations in place of backup alarms were permitted by law. 10, the operator shall notify Planning and Zoning a minimum of 24 hours prior to blasting. Planning and Zoning shall monitor all blasts for compliance with state standards. Seismograph reports will be submitted to the department within 10 days of each blast event. 11, under emergency conditions, the Planning and Zoning Administrator shall have the power to enact emergency operational hours. 12, the reclamation shall follow the approved plan submitted and comply with NR 135 and Sauk County Chapter 24. 13, where mineral extraction has been completed, those areas will be reclaimed by grading, covered with topsoil, mulched, and planted with a grass mixture. When quarrying is completed, the area will be returned to wildlife habitat and forest. It will be the responsibility of Bindle Bauer Limestone to establish and maintain a good solid sod cover on slopes and benches and floor. It shall be the responsibility of Bindle Bauer Limestone to inform Planning and Zoning of completion of reclamation and that area be accessible to Planning and Zoning staff. Number 14, within reasonable time after the Office of Planning and Zoning is aware of any violation, it will provide a written notice to Bindle Bauer Limestone specifying the nature of the violation and the action necessary to correct the violation. The second notice of violation for a specific item or the fourth notice of overall violation of any nature would cause a suspension of the permit. The suspension would be in effect until the violation is corrected to the satisfaction of the Office of Planning and Zoning and an application is submitted to the Board of Adjustment for a new or revised permit.
Seems
to that was a decision of the department. I think that was based on the fact that the hours of operation had been, we had had notification that they were operating prior to when they had started.
So you, I mean, I saw three sort of major changes in the permit based on the recommendations the planning zoning gave. One was the original permit 2008 was for 10 years, and you're recommending 5 years. The hours of operation from 6 hours down to 7 hours, or 7 a.m. rather, from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. is the basic starting time. There's some other differences too. And then the blasting notification. So are those all part of the county ordinances, or is this because there was a violation and you wanted to tighten it up a little bit, or is that where the recommendations come from?
The department felt that they did need to have some additional restrictions, particularly with notification of blasting, and that the hours of operation needed to be adhered to. So those were changes that were made to the existing special exception permit, or changes that we recommend be made.
Was this the first set of complaints you received on this, or?
This is the only complaints I am aware of.
I guess I still don't get the what was the reasoning for the hours going from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m.
That was the decision of the director of the department.
Okay. But the reasoning escapes you.
I wasn't privy to that conversation.
Okay.
The applicant, please come
forward. Yes. Joseph Bauer, E4097 Highway B. Well, I don't know where to start, but I didn't think it had to get this far out of, or it didn't have to get this. If we did something wrong, then you're given two complaints, which was both sent in an envelope to Sauk County Planning and Zoning, and one envelope, and it was sent after, I don't know how much later than he had written it on a piece of paper. And if he would have come to me and there was a problem, I could have fixed that problem. Because I didn't do the drilling. I hired a driller to do it. And Dan was the only person that's and his dad complained about that quarry back when Fred Bindle owned it back in the 70s and 80s, that constantly doing damage to their stuff down there. And Dan made a remark to me, a planning and zoning wants to be notified 24 hours ahead of time. I don't think we should really notify planning and zoning. We should be notified by Sauk County Police Department, because when I got that complaint from Sauk County, I went down to Dan's place, and Dan said to me, if I'd had a gun in my hand, I would have come up there and killed everybody in that quarry last year. When one of them blasted off, I said, Dan, if there was a problem, you should have come and said something, because every shot that we shoot up in that quarry is seismograph. And if it was black on white, it prints it out. And you can see right then, if the blast would have been that bad, automatically, they got to send it to the state. And as far as, like, anything that we do up in that quarry, I went around to all the neighbors and asked them if there was any complaint about us crushing, drilling, truck falling, anything we do up there. I went to all the neighbors, and I don't know if you're going to look at this or not, but nobody has had anything against anything we do up there. And if anybody would have, like, trucks hauling out, you know, like, the truck drivers, they like coming in and say start at 6 o'clock, and that way when it's hot in the summer, they can go home early, or somebody working up in the quarry. I mean, to start at 7 o'clock, that's kind of like, I don't even know how to put it other than the banker's hours. I mean, that's pretty much unacceptable. Starting at 7 months, so we had 6. You know, because
we're going to end up right back here again anyhow, because if the gate's open, and right now it was to the point where nobody even go up there. We own the land. Nobody go up there turkey hunting or nothing. You can't go up there to cut wood because you're afraid Sauk County Planning and Zoning's going to get a telephone call that we're in violation of what the ordinances are up there. And you think that we should pay the taxes on that land and have that nobody can go and enjoy that land? I get along with all the neighbors. Apparently, they wouldn't have signed that thing. I didn't go there. That's just the way it was. I wouldn't have asked. I don't need that signature. But I think that there should state all the neighboring landowners that signed that.
That's for 24-hour unlimited.
Well, it's not that we're going to run 24 hours, but let's say if we're like egg line. You only make that in the spring of the year when there's a need for it because you don't want to have a mountain of that around because it freezes in and you can't spread it. In the spring of the year, we always think, well, I can't make it. We got two crushing plants. My brother's one, the one that makes egg line. You set up and you make the egg line according to need. And then, you know, if you can work like, in the past, we went up there when the conditions were right. If you got in a week of rain and the lime is all, you can't screen lime when it rains. You got to do it when the sun shines. Wait a half a day after. And you know, in the past, we've always went up there and crushed whenever the conditions were fit in the spring or the fall of the year, according to what you needed for lime. And you know, the way it is now, I mean, you couldn't even... Everybody around there gets the line from us. I mean, right now we can't serve the people. And I mean, there's one person who was a county board member called for 1,000-ton alignment. You can ask him. I said, I didn't have 1,000-ton line to call him.
Did you have issues with prior
hours? No, we never had no problems with that.
So, prior hours
of operation did not include Sunday also? Well, how many lines of questions do you have that were Sunday? There was two line orders I turned down this year. One was 1,000 ton, and one was 500. Well, we got a little material, we don't have enough, but one was because we couldn't haul on Sunday. I mean, well, after that, I mean, in the past, we all, but then when somebody's watching you, you're going to kind of, I mean, this is what it says, this is what it's got to be. Some people call for line, well, you can just, sorry, we can't call it. I mean, it's not like you can go out in the field. Your line season is kind of limited. When you can't just go out in the field just because a storm goes over and starts spreading line. That's a short window, spreading line. You know, the only thing is, like, if I could, what I would ask for is if you could crush on, I mean, the noise, no neighbors got anything against the noise, and there ain't no noise. Like the drill track that the guy complained about, if you're standing right by the drill track, the decibels is 85. There was a photo or a copy of that. And then like the crushing stuff, there's none of that exceed 85. And with the drill track, you're on top of the hill, I'm sure the noise carries. With the crushing, the loudest noise would be a screen deck, and that would probably be like 70, 75 decibels, and that's down inside the quarry. There's berms all the way around the quarry. It's like at the, well, there's 60-foot faces. We take it down to like 15 or 20 feet so you can have a, you know, so you don't waste all your stuff sloping the bank. I mean, I asked Dan if he wanted to come up and look at what we did to the north side of the quarry. It's all restored. You don't even know the quarry's there. The slopes are there. They're seeded down. And I said, the south someday will look the same way. I mean, we ain't going to take it down to nothing. And then if we don't clear the top, you know, stuff. We don't just get up there with a bulldozer and push it downhill. We get off-road trucks, backhoes, and we haul it to a place where we can later put it back. So it's not like we don't strip like they did back 30, 40 years ago.
You came in front of the Board of Adjustment and got the special exception permit in 2008. You agreed to operate within certain time limits, and it sounds like that didn't happen. You said that once you found out that somebody complained, you
sort of lock in your gate and try to maintain the hours that you actually agreed to. Is that something that you have trouble doing, or?
We've never had trouble in the past. I did not know. I hired a drilling firm to come in and drill. I did not know what time they started.
You didn't tell them what time to start?
I didn't tell them what time to start. I mean, I just figured they'd come and start at daylight. And, you know, in March, daylight's probably 6, 6:30. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, it's some my fault, but...
Sure.
And, you know, I've already asked, like, last fall. I mean, I'd call Dan up. And, you know, like the drilling, if there's a storm coming and you're going to get a lot of rain, the last thing you want to do is have all those holes and get 3 or 4 inches of rain and fill the holes up, because then you can't use fertilizer for next closest. You got to use some sticks of stuff, and it don't fill the holes up, and it all does is just fracture the rock, and it costs so much more to crush it. And, you know, it's not like you can just add that on to the customer. You want to do things as cheap as possible. No, we usually try to watch the weather, and if you can get a shot, like, between storms is what you normally plan for. But sometimes, look like the rain just a day or two ago. I mean, there's a chance of rain. Look what we got. I mean, you know, and if you got a hole or a shot open, sometimes you just cut it off and get a shot before the rain comes.
I guess I have one here. I see the recommended hours, and I'm sure that I have it somewhere. What were the hours before?
6 to 9. 6 to 9. Oh, okay. I have a problem
right here. Don't you like to... You mean for the blasting?
Blasting.
No, I didn't. I don't have no. I brought a guy that shoots a lot of the shots in the Lynn's quarry. He's in charge of it. And, like, the hours of blasting, I mean, he can tell you more about that than me, because sometimes, what if you're on a shot and you're loading the shot and the truck breaks down and they got to go and bring another truck with fertilizer in? Sometimes it's impossible to shoot in that timetable. I mean, he can tell you more about it. I know he knows more about that than I do. Yes, if we start drilling the shot, we can call, and I don't know what they can do, because if Sauk County Planning and Zoning can do that, because if the guy brought along, he can tell you what is acceptable by the state, and if it goes over that, they automatically got to send them records to the state. So I don't know what planning and zoning, I mean, if they want to be there, it don't matter to me. I mean, it's only one telephone call.
How long does it take?
Well, if you got trouble, and normally it's probably 2 to 3 days to drill a nice size shot, you know, like 25,000 tons or 30,000 tons. But if you, when you're drilling, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, sometimes you could get caught in a hole when you're drilling for everybody a day, and you don't get 60 feet in a day. I mean, it don't happen very often, but if you hit a crevice or something, the drill steel goes off, and the last thing you want to do is leave $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 worth of drill steel and bit down in that hole. So you give it every effort you can to get that back. I mean, I don't know if I've been lucky or what, but I've drilled for 26 years, and I've only lost one set of drill steel.
Anyone else in favor?
I do. Keith Clink. N2331 Taylor Road, Hartford, Wisconsin, 50027. Mine just pertains to the blasting hours, which I really have no problems with. But as Joe brought up, we run into variables. I guess I would ask for a variance, an emergency situation, as in electrical storms or something comes in. Say we would start work whenever the operation is good, 6 o'clock or whatever. We get on our jobs early, anticipating problems. We always have to anticipate problems. So, say the blast has got to go off at 9 a.m. by the law, and there's an electrical storm moves in, and we know lightning's moving in the area. For safety's sake, I would just like to be able to make a call to you folks, say I have a storm coming in. It could prematurely set off the blast, endangering people. Could I shoot? Or if I break down during the day, or we have trouble loading the shot, which is very rare, but it does happen. We have mechanical breakdown, and 4 o'clock is the limit. I've got to fix the truck. I've got to bring another truck in. All of a sudden, I can't blast till 6. It's not safe to sit on a blast overnight, naturally, because it's dark. You know, you could have people roaming the woods, whatever, and it's not cost-effective, of course. These are rare occasions, but I work with a lot of communities where we're on a will-call basis. I run into problems. I call them, give them a warning. We're going to run an hour late, you know, half hour late, and they say go ahead and take care of it. But it's a rarity, but it does happen. And that's my only concern on the blasting. As far as calling in, prior to the blast, is no problem. No, that was a drilling contractor operating separate from me. Just came and loaded the blast. I'm a blasting contractor.
They're separate?
Yes.
They're separate as controlled by us.
Right. I'm a contractor they hire in. And I have one question, too, on calling in the 24-hour. Do you need a 24-hour? Or can you call in on Monday and say we're going to shoot sometime this week? You do need that 24 hours, right?
24 hours, okay.
So if we call you on Tuesday and say we're going to shoot Thursday or Friday, you folks would be good with that?
Just to be clear, you're not calling us.
All right, okay.
You know, that would be, the contact would be the planning and zoning department. And so you have to work out whatever flexibility, and we'll, perhaps we can find out what that might be.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's not our position.
But that's my only concern is working outside of those hours. Happens rarely, but it does come up in emergency situations. I guess I would ask that be implemented into the brain.
As far as your concern, part of the business or drilling?
I don't do any drilling, so I can't try to get on it.
The prior week.
We usually start at daylight.
Getting ready.
Right. Right. I would have no problem with those hours, except for, like I said, all of a sudden, we're ready at 8 in the morning, and there is a severe thunderstorm coming, which lightning is our biggest fear in our industry, and it could prematurely set it off, endangering human life.
Questions?
Thank you.
Anyone else in favor that would like to speak? Anyone opposed? Please.
I do. Dan Ritten, S11189, County Road D. I am the person that did write the letters to planning and zoning, but I'd like to just narrate a little history. We were here in 2008 and granted this special exemption for the quarry. At that time, I posed the question, was the quarry going to run out the East Ridge towards County G overlooking the Big Hollow Valley. That was my concern. My house sits there. I can see the ridge. I was told at that hearing that, no, you wouldn't see the quarry from Highway G. I said, great. Last fall, the point was stripped. You could see that activity. This spring, it was drilled. I woke up, I forget the date in March, but at 4:20 a.m. to the sound of drilling rigs, I got out of bed and looked out my bedroom window, and I could see two drill rigs up on the point. I noted the time, thought that was kind of odd. Went to bed the next night, got up at 4:45 to the same noise. Called planning and zoning. Steve said, well, send the letters in. This is clearly outside their hours of operation. And I did. Prior to that, after the 08 hearing and the granting of the permit, the following spring, Easter Sunday morning, I got up about 6 a.m. to go outside and hide Easter eggs for my two little girls. I stepped out the door to the sound of a drill rig up in the quarry. This was Easter Sunday morning, 2009. I thought, God, that's odd. Must be a real reason why he needs to be in there Easter Sunday morning doing this at 6 a.m. Didn't call planning and zoning, didn't write a letter, just mentally noted it. I wasn't going to be around the rest of the day after that. We're going to relatives, et cetera. So just another case in point where clearly operating outside the hours of operation. And maybe he can explain that. The spring blast of 2009, that was very violent. I was home for my house and my buildings. I didn't threaten to go up and kill anybody. I made the comment that it really upset me. You know, I requested the seismic information from that blast. I have not received it yet. The spring blast this year, seismic equipment in my yard. I was there, saw the blast, could clearly see it. Was maybe a fourth of the rumble and the feeling shaking of the ground compared to the previous one. So we're still looking for that information. Maybe it's out there, maybe it's not, I don't know. But I know what I felt, I know what my buildings do. I just contracted to have my barn taken down because the limestone foundation is big impacted. The responsibility for this permit clearly is, you know, on the shoulders of the guy that comes in here and asks for it. And when we had a discussion in my yard, he wouldn't take any responsibility because he didn't do the drilling. You know, and I said, Joe, if you're contracting it, that is your responsibility. If you possess this permit, that is your responsibility. There was a little, maybe not agreement in regards to that point. So, with what I've experienced, what I've conveyed to planning and zoning, what I've put down on record, what I haven't, what I've just discussed here today, I guess I'm in support for the recommendations that the planning and zoning department has put forth, because he has clearly not demonstrated himself as a responsible quarry operator. And I think that's part of deferring the hours of operation back an hour, just to, you know, bring things in compliance. You were granted this, you chose not to follow it, and now these are the repercussions. That's basically all I've got to say. It varies. Usually they have a big blast in the spring, a lead-off blast that occupies them most of the season, but not always. Sometimes there's multiple blasts. It just depends on the magnitude and the size of the rock they bring down. Sometimes two, sometimes 3 year. It varies.
Prior, how long?
I grew up on the farm that I currently own. I've owned it now for 6 years.
Prior to Flower Park,
did you ever keep this farm? I didn't. My father had a 100-year-old hand dug well on the farm that was laid up in limestone that eventually caused the mortar to give way and it to collapse, and we had to re-drill a well. We've taken down a few farm buildings that were old, laid-up limestone foundations that the mortar just powdered and comes out, and the buildings get unsafe. The blast this spring was, in my terms, mellow compared to the one of the spring of 09 that I'm trying to get the seismic information for. So I think it's rather inconsistent.
Are you the closest neighbor, or is there others that are closer to the quarry?
I am the closest non-related, non-benefiting party of the quarry. The owners have homes closer. There is a brother to Joe that has a home close. You're welcome.
Anyone wants to appear in any of the categories?
My name is Pat McEwen. My address is N750 Golf Road, Curtis, Wisconsin. I represent the farm between Dan and the quarry. And I was raised on the farm. I lived there before Joe was born. So I've never had any problems. We don't live there now. We have a hunting cabin up there that we go out and use on weekends. But I've never really had any problems with the quarry. We have a tile that's probably 100 years old. That's a tile. And that's still standing. That's right at the base of the hill. Underneath the top of the hill, and the quarry is right there. Maybe a quarter of a mile. So he's always been a good neighbor. Dan's father was a, went to school with him. So I'm sort of in between these two guys, you know. Like to see a settled ribbon.
Like to hear in any that will call the public portion hearing.
Any questions of planning and zoning?
Yes.
There was a proposal to have put some flexibility into the notification. What's yours? The recommendation was a minimum of 24 hours notice before blasting. What kind of flexibility in that, you know, based on what you've heard today?
What most other operators do is they'll notify us 24 hours prior, say, like, we're going to be having a blast somewhere tomorrow between 11 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have the blaster, the guy who's coordinating the blast, give us a call, sometimes 2 hours before. Okay, we're narrowed it down, it's going to be at 1 o'clock. And then if we have staff available, we will go out and be on site when the blast is held.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not available, then we'll tell them it's okay to go ahead and blast, but submit the seismic reports to our department.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have flexibility. But it's based on how many individuals we have off the field or where they're at.
Well, do you have, they were suggesting that, we'll call in and say, we're thinking Thursday, it's Thursday or Friday, and depending on the weather, do you get those kinds of calls, or are the other operators that you are experienced with tend to narrow it down?
Well, they tend to narrow it down, but there's a window in there because they don't, like he says, they don't know what they're going to run into when they start drilling or what the weather conditions are. And we're willing to be flexible enough to work with the blasters. We're not going to say, well, you can't charge, you can't have run this shot just because we aren't there,
mm-hmm.
if it's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm. And then do you ever flex the time? If you have an agreement that they are supposed to blast within a certain period of time, do you hold to that, or is that a...
That's flexible.
Is it?
I think the department does have the leeway to work with the blaster to accommodate, in particular when there's weather concerns or safety concerns involved.
Would you have a problem if we left the old hours?
Would I have a problem?
The department. It almost sounds like this is a slap on the hand.
I don't think the department would have, the board has the ability to set the conditions. And we have we're required to enforce the conditions that are set by the board.
As far as you know, all of the entrances at this point have
There is only one entrance that I'm aware of, and that is locked. It does have a gate. Well, the gate has been there since, I think I set the fire sign out there when I first came to the county in 2001, so the gate has been there.
Well, I'm looking at I'm sort of grappling with that. The three changes here are the blasting notification, and I don't have any. I think that's a reasonable thing, and it's something that's used with other operators in South County. The changing the permit from a 10-year permit to a 5-year permit, I think, makes sense in the sense that the operator they made an agreement with South County in the past that didn't follow it. So I think that it makes sense to shorten the time of the permit so that they have a chance to review it again. And then as far as hours of operation, one thing that was added there was a specific time for blasting. That wasn't in the other one. I think that's a good one to have in light of the flexibility that we just heard about on the rare occasions when it's needed. And as far as the crushing, loading, and trucking, I don't really have a problem with that going back to the 6 a.m. But, I think the concern is that, that kind of the reaction of the operator was, well, I want 24/7, which suggests, that's not something that any operator that we've dealt with in the past has asked for, because they understand that they have neighbors. And so I think that indicates, to me, kind of a problem as far as following the guidelines. So, I think the recommendations of planning and zoning make sense to me, but the terms of the crushing, processing, loading, and trucking, I'd be in support of 6 a.m. start time.
One of the things that the applicant mentioned is we should do some things on Sunday. That's pretty blatant.
That's right, yeah.
And one of the things that we've done in the past is send the permits, consider those to be good neighbor permits. So mining sites that had not had a violating their permits first 5 years when they would extend the permit, so they didn't have to pass. But I agree that in light of that issue, should change that back.
Well, I guess maybe I'm missing something with blasting. Why can they not start blasting before 9 a.m.?
I
mean, the fact that they did it at 4.
When they were drilling.
They're drilling at 4, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I was just wondering what's the difference if they're blasting or drilling or trucking or crushing, why 9 a.m.?
As far as the blasting is concerned, I consider that to be more of an imposition on the neighbors. Some of the other things, some of them woke up with the blast at 6 in the morning, or.
Right. But maybe
the other issue is if the planning and zoning staff is going to be present, you need to have it during business hours.
Oh, okay. Well, that answers that part then. But I think the hours should go back to where I think we should have 6 a.m. We have some farm backgrounds here, and if you have a wet season and can't plant your crops until you get your lime spread, the only way they can get to more people is to start early.
So taking the recommendations of the planning and zoning staff, instead of the 7 a.m. start date, you would use the 6 a.m.?
That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
I guess with planning and zoning needing to be there, I understand that why I can't be till 9 and it start at 8 and gotta travel.
I would look at Saturday loading and trucking until also gives for the conditions talked about it where we do this on a Sunday fashion, not changing on Sunday.
There is no Sunday.
Right, that's what I mean. I
right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the original application ended at 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Do you want to expand it?
Okay,
I make a motion. A motion to approve the special exception permit with the conditions provided by planning and zoning, with the only changes to be the under the hours of operation for crushing and processing change to 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and loading and trucking 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday.
Second. Second. You said you would second it? Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And you receive the letter. We'll go to the third case for today.
Let me take a break. I want to take a break.
5 minutes?
Sure.
All right. Please, back in session.
Dave Loren, Sauk County Planning and Zoning. This is a request for a special exception permit to authorize filling and grading within 300 feet of Lake Wisconsin. The plans call for the replacement of a wooden stairs with stone and landscaping of the steep slopes to prevent erosion. The property is located in the Shoreland Protection Zoning District on real estate described as E13425 Gray Street, Lot 4 of Indian Heights. Part of the northwest quarter of the northwest quarter of Section 10, Town 10 North, Range 7 East, Town of Merrimack. previous permits. In 03, there was a land use permit issued by planning and zoning for the installation of the existing stairs. No septic permits found, no previous appeals to the Board of Adjustment, no citations issued. Facts of the case, when reviewing a special exception permit for filling and grading in the Shoreland Protection District, the Board of Adjustment listed several criteria, including the conditions listed in Section 8.08, Parent 3, and the provisions specified in Sections 8.14, Parent 3, Parent B, and 8.14, Parent 3, Parent C. Section 8.08, Parent 3, Parent A of the Sauk County Shoreland Protection Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for any filling or grading which is within 300 feet landward of the ordinary high water mark of a navigable water and which has surface drainage towards the water and on which there is any of the topographic conditions listed. One, any filling or grading on slopes of more than 20%. Two, filling or grading of more than 2,000 square feet on slopes of 12 to 20%. Three, filling and grading of more than 4,000 square feet of slopes of less than 12%. The surrounding properties, north, east, and west, is developed and undeveloped residential lots. To the south is Lake Wisconsin. Floodplain map has been provided. The effective date on that is 12/15/09. There are no mapped wetlands indicated in this area. Lake Wisconsin is a navigable body of water and is subject to the Shoreland Protection Ordinance. I'd like to direct the board to look at the photographs, the exhibits 5, 1, 2, and 3. Photo number 1 is taken from the northeast corner of the deck up at the house, looking down towards the lake. Photo number 2 is a photo from the northwest corner of the deck, looking down towards the lake. You can see the existing stairs there that were built under the permit issued in 03. This is about photo number 3 is about halfway down the stairs. This is looking to the west, an example of the steep slope on the existing site. And photo number 4 is from the same location, looking to the east. There again, we've got a very steep slope. Photo 5 is from the existing stairs looking back towards the house. And photo 6, that is a view from the bottom of the stairs near the shore looking towards the north. And if we could start the video, please. From the existing deck, looking down towards the lake, the existing stairs. And that is looking to the west, an example of what the average slope is. It is very I would say this is of this area of Indian Heights, but this about the stairs, I'm not a lot. see any evidence of problem with erosion. I see the vegetation. From shoreline to shoreline, back up. We did get notification from the town of Merrimack. They voted to support the granting of the special exception request. They did not make comments. Planning and zoning would recommend that the following conditions be considered by the board should the board grant the special exception permit. A, that all work on and use of the premises shall proceed with plans and supplemental evidence presented at this hearing. And it is the responsibility of the applicant to secure all required town, state, federal, and county permits within 1 year of the hearing date. County permits required for this approval would include a land use permit. The erosion controls shall be installed and maintained until the site is stabilized and revegetated per the plans submitted at the time of this application. C, that Sauk County Planning and Zoning shall be granted permission to view the site to ensure compliance with these conditions and other relevant provisions of the Sauk County Ordinance. Power to ensure compliance with these conditions is given to Sauk County Planning and Zoning. And if the department finds that any of these conditions have been violated, they are hereby authorized to take corrective action, either through suspension of the permit, citations, or by any form of enforcement that is within their power. Not at all.
As far as other areas,
I would have to say that the proposed plan here is probably more a larger project than is existing on the other homes in that area. But I didn't physically go out and inspect for that.
Right. Did when your department looked at the planning zoning, looked at this, did you see issues with parts of the plan that you care to comment on?
I'd say the only issue that planning and zoning is concerned about is the slope, how steep it is right now. Whether or not they're going to be able to utilize or gain access to this with machinery, or whether it's going to all be done by hand, or whether they're going to do it from the water and work their way up, I'm not sure. But I do know that the erosion control part of it is going to be a challenge on this site.
Yes. The applicant, please come forward. Brain burst there. All right, I'm going to go next.
Okay.
Do you swear to tell the truth?
Yes, ma'am. Todd Basil, 1126 Plants Road, with a Z, Deerfield, Wisconsin. Well, basically, we want to maintain the natural beauty of the slope, and our plan incorporates that. Currently, as Mr. Lorenz brought out, there's not a lot of erosion on the actual slope, except for under the stairs. The infrastructure of the steps, which because of the way they're built, which is the only way they could be built, they don't allow vegetation to grow underneath because of the shade. And if you look underneath those stairs, it's acting like a sluice. So the water actually flushes right down through under those sections of straight stairs. So we're trying to alleviate that and make access of the slope more feasible for the homeowner by not impacting the there's probably on that wooded site, there's probably safely 40 to 50 trees in that 75 feet from the lake shore up. And I don't believe we're even affecting any of those trees. There might be two. So we want to maintain, we agree to maintain the natural beauty. That the homeowner wants to maintain the natural look. We want to maintain the natural look, but they still want to enjoy their property. So our proposal is to put that switchback fashion natural limestone staircase wrapping down to the lake in conjunction with limestone stabilization walls to maintain that slope, using a layer of geogrid every couple of feet to get back into that slope to maintain it. It is a glacial till, and so that needs to be maintained. We plan on using also, prior to any of this, we plan on using erosion control by using a 9-inch filter sock. We've been, well, not myself personally or Rich, but we've been before the board and you have approved similar projects on the lake where we do use that filter sock as an erosion control. It is filled with a compost sand material, so it is actually way better than a silt fence that you normally see where you pound the stakes in, stakes break off, they can be compromised. So we will put that erosion control around the entire property with slope interrupters, as you see diagram there on that area right above the area we don't even plan on affecting. And we're also planning on using a combination of living walls. We're using that same filter stock where that's actually built up. There are some pictures in what we've presented to the board. I believe if you don't have copies of it in your packet, we can provide some pictures. We do have pictures of all the materials. All natural material used in the setback area. The nice thing about the living wall is the slope is going to be planted with native vegetation and grow in. We plan on having this grow in within 3 weeks of completion. So your slope is going to be stabilized and go back to a natural state where that the actual root structure of the plant is stabilizing any area that the living wall is built, and that's a biodegradable material. So eventually that material, the rooting in the plants, what you see now on the slope will be a good representation of what that wall will look like. After some time, you won't even know that material is in there, except for the fact that the safety of the slope and the erosion factor, it will not allow the erosion on the slope, even to the point of what you see now. The couple landing areas, as far as areas to use the slope, will be built with the limestone with some crushed granite at the base. We plan on putting some catch basins, to maintain runoff on the property, not to let water affect either of the neighbors. We wanted to put drain tile, as you see designed in the plan, with some catch basins and divert that to the lake. So really, we feel that not only will it beautify and maintain the natural look while allowing the owner to enjoy the property, but it's going to reduce any erosion that currently is on the site and eliminate that. That actually is a pool within the building unit of the envelope of the site. That would be the well water to fill the pool.
And so is that accommodated by removing an existing decks?
Yeah, the deck that's on the house, we're going to take off the deck, and the piers that are under the deck would have to come off to facilitate the construction of the pool area.
And then as far as the removal of vegetation between the 75 feet next to the lake, what do you see I mean, obviously, this project looks like it's going to end up clearing quite a bit just to accommodate it. You're suggesting you're not going to be removing trees or part of the concern of the purpose of the shoreline protection ordinance is not only erosion and degrading the water quality and fish habitat concern of citizens, but also the screening, really the screening of the house from the lakeside. And I'm wondering if you would comment on that.
Yeah, the only, and we have, and the owner, which was yesterday, came to the stone pier, we call it, down by the lake where you see that flagstone area, that is no longer even part. That is going to be, what their purpose to try to gain there is a less than 20% slope, so in the future they may get approval for a boathouse, whether that happens or not. But to try to create that area, there's, and if you see in the pictures, there is a relatively level area down there, just not quite enough to accommodate that. And that would be the area within the shoreline protection area where to create that, there's some broom handle size trees. We were there with Steve Sorensen, who's not here today, and he said this doesn't look like a problem at all because we're with you. We don't want to take out any trees. The homeowner doesn't. So just that one area where we want to put the retention and create that less than 20% slope, the biggest trees there, some saplings, are probably about this size. There's nothing substantial that would be affected, and we understand the permit for that area. That would be the only area where we're, but as far as affecting the look, when you're on the lake looking back at the property, it's going to look, as far as vegetation and trees, that's why you'll see some of those landing areas that are built are conformed the way they are, because we want to make best use of the property while still maintaining the natural look. And those correspond to what now exists, the wooden stairs and deck landing areas. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to clear out maybe three or four trees up in that upper area, and that's if they absolutely can't be worked into the, and then we are going to replace and replant. So as far as a visual clearing it out and making it a stark, you wouldn't know. When we're there, it's actually going to look nicer, and you won't even know that it'll look as natural as it was, if not more so, than the scrubby look that you have right now.
So you're saying that you're proposing some grading to accommodate that, the deck area?
The deck area
by the lake?
By the lake, yeah. Well, there's going to be no deck area anymore. You'll see on the bottom of the plan, there's an actual living wall, stabilization wall, mm-hmm. set back to try to create that current slope. I believe the slope right now is less than 20%, but we're trying to just gain a little bit right there so that you could add. Mm-hmm. So as far as that area, there will be a little bit of grading in that area, but not to a great degree, because we're at about 50-60% slope currently up. But when you get right down by the water, I guess just from as the table has fluctuated, the lake has created sort of a landing area, if you will, in that area. So there's not a lot of grading that's going to be needed right in that area.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at the plan, there's a couple of concerns I have. One is, you know, the first landing area where it looks like you have a fire pit,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, if you think of that as a structure, and it meets the definition of structure in the ordinance, they talk about landings associated with stairs, walkways do not exceed 32 square feet, and that's 10 times that size. The other concern I have is just sort of this, and I appreciate your forthrightness about it, but I'm still concerned about it, and we've had this happen come before us in the past, but this idea that if you get a permit to do some grading so that then you can come back later and have a site actually qualify for a boathouse because it's no longer 20% is troubling to me, because the purpose of the ordinance is that if it's 20%, there's not going to be a boathouse there, period. It's not a matter of you know, you take it in stages. I mean, it seems to defeat the whole purpose of the ordinance. So that part of your plan troubles me, and I have trouble with that one. The landing is another one of those ones where we've had discussion about that, and so I just need to, you know, we'll have more discussion today. But so those are things I'm not seeing you answer that are troubling with this plan.
Well, currently where that fire pit is proposed, mm-hmm. there is a current landing and deck area that sits out. So So that actually exists. That level area, that landing natural area actually exists there now. If you, the pictures when you look down the slope, actually there's a boardwalk where, which is a transition from one set of stairs to the other, that sets out. And then inside that boardwalk, the approximate size of that landing is all level area where they do have a place where they can burn fires and...
Well, that's where the fire pit is right now.
Yeah, so we're, that's why you see we're, how we try to design this is to make use of the land the way it lays now with the least effect or least where we change anything. We're just trying to work with, and there's no trees in that area that would be affected. So really, we understand, we don't want to affect the site, and we understand your concerns. That's why we're only trying to use the two areas that are right now constructed with wood, but just to now use natural stone and rework those so that we can not clear out any other areas. That's why nothing else exceeds where that natural area is. All this that's affected has already been affected by what stairs have gone in there. So, and as far as I understand your concern with the boathouse, really the only thing we're asking to be able to put in there is that that the living wall to stabilize what's there, because we're not encroaching into what's there. Mm-hmm. There's already a level area where you could probably, if the board approved in the future, put a boathouse. We understand the letter, too, that no, we're not trying to circumnavigate and say, look at now you've got 20%. That's already existing, like I said, by the natural lake. There are some scrub trees there. Mm-hmm. We were just asking that we could put that living wall retention so to maintain that so that in the future, if you were to approve a boathouse, because it is fitting that required less than 20%. But no, we're not going to try to dig that out and then say, look at what we have here. We hope you'll approve this. No, I understand your concern that that wasn't what we were trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Actually, those two things, and like I said, he called yesterday because he wanted to reduce the budget. The water feature is now next. We have a new plan with us. There's no water feature in that area. So it would be, the water source would be the well water, again, and that would be a recirculating, but that is not part of our request at this time. It doesn't feed, like, his water feature is Lake Wisconsin, he's deciding. Yeah, the pool will still be there. 5 to 6 feet at the deepest. I believe it's 3 to 5 feet, 3.5 to 5.5 feet. That's a swimming pool, yes. And that falls within the building envelope part of this. We've made sure when we designed that was not within the non-man-made structure, which is affected by this.
Is the this drawing that you provided to us the dotted lines, the existing elevations, or the after the project elevation?
Mr. Strominger, he can answer that. He's the architect. He would be able to address that better than myself. Thank you.
Anyone else in favor?
Rich Strominger, 572 Cherrywood Drive, Oregon. To answer your question about the grading lines, the dash lines are the existing elevations,
okay.
And the top of the lines are proposed. Oh, we're coming around the right side of the left side of the house.
Okay.
Down the slope, yes.
Project diverting water on property?
No, ma'am. No, we've the line, the contour lines, I've tried to show that how that will create swales that are kind of capture with through catch basins, which Todd pointed out earlier, and going underground with drain tile.
the in this drawing, you've got the notation keep existing natural. That everything within this
in
area.
In that colored area, we anticipate not disturbing that area.
And what's currently in that area?
There are, I think there's a river birch in there, again, mostly scrub, grass,
so
smaller trees.
So smaller trees, it's mm-hmm. not the more established trees on the property.
Right.
What's the fate of the more established trees? I, you know, it sounds like you're trying to work around them, but, you know, as far as opening this up, opening up the view from the house.
Down at the bottom, there are no really established, there's really no established trees down in that area. More towards the side up by the swimming pool is where the trees are that we would be, you know, the older trees, and they're really not meant to be in shape either, some old cedars.
And so down in this area, is this, I mean, what type of vegetation planning is there for this area here? Because it's about a 6-foot drop in that, you know, in a, maybe it looks like about a 16 to 20 foot area.
Yeah, that would be seeded with fescue, like a normal low-growth fescue.
So more like a kind of a
grassy, meadowy look.
Uh-huh. And then there's no saplings or other types of things down there?
Not in there, no.
No.
And currently there, is that, you mean currently there?
Yeah.
Is there? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, there are some small, again, small caliper poplars and things like that.
So, and why are those getting moved out?
Those, oh, because of the green that's happening down there.
What's there now?
Oh, mainly in that living wall area there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Between the living wall and the lake is what we're talking about. Yeah.
The whole length of it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So is the idea that we remove the, pretty much remove the vegetation in here and then establish fescue?
Yeah.
Or is it to work around what we have there?
Yes.
Remove it? But, I mean, you're saying yes. I said two things. I should have slowed down a little bit. So it's to remove the existing vegetation and then establish fescue in here below the living wall?
Yes, we'll be removing small scrub vegetation in there, in that area between the living wall and the lake. Yes, dude. Yes.
Well, and then this, I'm taking, this is your erosion control material?
Yes, sir.
All the way around?
Mm-hmm.
This way.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Ever? Opposed?
Todd, Faithful. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. Right now, where your question is, where the no-mow fescue down by between the living wall, currently what exists there is their dock, and when they pull their dock in for the winter, it's all, so there's not the there's no established trees. There's, like I mentioned, there's a few trees down there that are like broom handle size, and we are not planning on clearing the whole waterway. There's an area there that's about 30 feet wide and 18 feet deep. Just to make sure I get my facts straight. And that's where the dock sits. It's where the steps come down. It all gets piled up on the shore currently, and that's the area that we want to build that area up and maintain that less than 20% slope that's there, but seed it with fescue. But no, we're not going to clear the whole shoreline. That we were specific with Steve Sorensen down there, and he agreed. He said this doesn't seem to be an issue at all. And I'm not to put words in Steve's mouth, but you could. But no, that area we're not planning on clearing out. He said it doesn't seem like there'd be an issue at all. He said you would have to get that shoreline permit, but it, that's why we proposed it where it is. It's currently where the stairs come down and where the dock exists. And so since that area has already been affected, that's the area we were trying to work with. Mm-hmm. But there are a few scrub trees down there that we would have to take out, so, but nothing major.
So the way I'm reading it, it looks like it's about a 6 or 7 foot drop over a 20 foot area, or is it, or as you said, it's more like 30 feet?
And where that area is, and it's hard to explain, but where the water comes back to that 50 to 60 degree slope comes down, it comes back to about where that area we're putting that, or we're proposing to put that in, that living wall. And so then right from there, like I said, it looks like at one time the water level was up to where that, because that's the only explanation for why that steep slope would come here, and then we'd have a level area. And so right where you see that intersection is where we're wanting to propose establishing that to maintain that living wall slope. No, we're not planning on trying to reconfigure the shoreline. We just know that. We wouldn't even be asking if we thought it was trying to create something that we knew wasn't acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the air mac is no problem with it, correct? And they've come up with a very complete plan. They don't have a problem with it.
Dave, I would like to see absolute minimum number of trees. Would you just leave that? Leave it? No. I had a lot of time to think.
I'd make a motion that we approve it.
With the planning and zoning recommendations?
With the planning and zoning recommendations.
That's what I'm
saying.
Aye.
Aye.
Dave Lorenz, Stark County Planning and Zoning. This request is for a special exception permit to authorize the location and operation of a proposed solid waste transfer station. The current transfer site operated by in the city of Baraboo has closed, and the intention is to move to the property owned by the city north of town. The property is located in the Resource Conservancy District 35 on real estate described as E11604 Crawford Street, part of the northeast quarter of the southeast quarter of Section 23, Town 12 North, Range 6 East, in the town of Baraboo. Access to the proposed site will be from County Highway A. There are no land use permits or septic permits found on this parcel, no previous appeals to the Board of Adjustment, no citations have been issued. When reviewing a special exception proposal and change in land use, the Board of Adjustment looks at several criteria, including promoting health, safety, and general welfare, whether there are constraints to development and impacts to surrounding properties, and if the proposed use is consistent with local and county development plans and codes. Section 7.10, parent 2, parent D8 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for governmental uses. This property has been used as a landfill in the past, but that has been closed and reclaimed. Surrounding properties to the north are three residences within 500 feet of the proposed site, as well as agricultural properties. In the south is agricultural lands. To the east, that would be the east side of Highway A, that's located in the town of Fairfield. There are several residential properties within 500 feet of the proposed site. And to the west is agricultural and forest lands with three residences within a quarter mile of the proposed site. There is no floodplain indicated on this parcel, and there are no mapped wetlands indicated on this parcel. If I could direct the board to the photographs, exhibits 5, 1, 2, and 3. Photo number 1 is the entrance to the site on the west side of Highway A. Photo 2 shows existing residences on the east side of Highway A. These are located in the town of Fairfield. Photo number 3 is a current waste transfer station in the southwest corner of the existing parcel. I believe this is operated by the town of Baraboo. Photo 4 is taken from the same location on Crawford Street, and that's looking at agricultural fields to the west of the site. Photo 5, that's taken from within the site itself, looking to the north across the area that's closed landfill. And photo 6 is agricultural fields on the south side of Crawford Street. And if we could start the video, please. That's the entrance to the site on Highway 80. South along A, on the east side of A there is several residences located in the town of Fairfield. They were notified. North, and that from the inside, that's back towards Highway A, heading to the north. And that's looking to the west across the old landfill site, turning around back to the south. Crawford Street located on the opposite of those two. Just at the entrance, the proposed building would be further to the left. This is existing facility located in the southwest corner of the site, looking west on Crawford Street, agricultural fields to the south side of Crawford Street, east of A, that's the existing small transfer station operated by the pump. camera. the town of Baraboo has not responded at this time, or the town of Fairfield. Planning and zoning would recommend that the following conditions be considered by the board should the board grant the special exception permit. A, that all work on and use of the premises shall proceed with the plans and supplemental evidence presented at the hearing. And it is the responsibility of the applicant to secure all required town, state, federal, and county permits within 1 year of the hearing date. County permits would include land use permits for the structures. B, the permit shall remain in effect for a period of 5 years and may be renewed by the Board of Adjustment at that time. The permit shall be non-transferable. C, the applicant shall take all measures to control odor and litter. D, the site security shall be provided by a locked gate, fencing, and no trespassing signs. E, any advertising signage will require permits. F, the Sauk County Planning and Zoning shall be granted permission to view the site to ensure compliance with these conditions and other relevant provisions of the Sauk County ordinances. Power to ensure compliance with these conditions is given to Sauk County Planning and Zoning. And if the department finds that any of these conditions have been violated, they are hereby authorized to take corrective action, either through suspension of the permit, citations, or by any means of enforcement that is within their power. City of Baraboo. No, it does not have to be rezoned. A governmental use is a permitted use with a special exception permit in any zoning district. it's fairly residential, particularly to the east, along A. The rest of it is mostly surrounded by agricultural properties.
Why was the site abandoned at one time?
There was an existing landfill, and that was abandoned. It was reclaimed and abandoned. I don't know when that happened, but I'm sure the applicant would be able to explain the history of the site.
The applicant, please come forward.
Good morning. Did we see that? We did.
Yes. For record.
I need to show what I want.
We won't need the cardboard.
Okay. That's fine.
Great. Curtis Altruth.
I do. Chuck Bongard, City Engineer, City of Baraboo, 135 4th Street, Baraboo, Wisconsin. The city now, the current garbage collection and transfer operation with the City of Baraboo now, the city has collected their own garbage for years and continues to do so. They haul that garbage now to the Veolia company on Ash Street and right at the Baraboo River, Ash and Water Street in the Baraboo River. That area, that facility is in the City of Baraboo Riverfront Redevelopment District. The city has received some grants to purchase property and has in fact purchased the property that Veolia currently operates on, and it's in the process of moving Veolia out of that area, or requiring Veolia to move out of that area. As a result of that, the city needs someplace else to go with its garbage. This proposal is to construct on the city landfill property, and this has been a landfill. It was closed back in the early 1980s. It was never constructed to the standards of today's landfill. So at the time, it was out of compliance. It didn't have the liners, leachate collection, gas venting, everything else that goes into a modern-day sanitary landfill. So back in the 80s, it was closed and capped according to DNR regulations. And I can't leave this with you, but the area
This is an aerial photograph of the property out here. The area that is shown here is open space. This all was. The area here that's shown, it looks, appears to be open field, is what was the active landfill area of the old landfill. It is the part that is capped and closed, and any activity on top of that capped area is restricted. The proposal is to construct the transfer station off in the area that is outside of the area that was active landfill. As the photos that Mr. Lorenz showed, the panning, when he walked into the site and he panned from left to right, there was a bunch of cedar trees that you saw initially. That is the area where the transfer station would be placed if it was approved. It's a single driveway access into the property, a 50 by 75 foot building, metal building, with a couple garage doors on one end that would be constructed. The garbage brought into the site would enter into here, back into that building, and dump the garbage and recycling on the floor inside of that building. It would then get picked up and loaded over the side and into a compactor and compacted into an enclosed semi-trailer, which would be hauled out, once it was full. The current proposal is that the city picks up garbage 5 days a week. They would have one garbage truck per day hauling garbage out to this property. It would be dumped on the floor in the transfer station. It would be on that same day scooped up and compacted into the trailer. They also collect one load of recycles, and the recycles would be dumped on the floor of the same building separately, but not hauled out on a weekly, one load a week. So they would pile up in the building, then be scooped in and compacted into the trailer and hauled away once a week. So you're talking about two trucks a day out to the site, 5 days a week, and three semi-loads out of the property. This application is entirely and strictly for the use of the city of Baraboo. It would not be privately operated, and we would not take garbage from any other sources. It would just be that garbage that is collected in the city of Baraboo. It would not be open as other types of transfer stations are for the public to come in and get rid of their waste there. It would strictly be operated by the city. They would leave a machine out there. As I said, any solid waste refuse at the end of the day would be scooped up and compacted in the enclosed vehicle, which we believe really curtails the amount of odor that would be as a result. And in addition to that, we would propose that the floors would get washed down also after that daily use. Reason I overheard some questions. I'm not going to answer them because I may not then have to come back up. But some of the questions are why this site. One, the city owns this site, owns the property. Two, it's on County Trunk Highway A, which is a road that is constructed of a nature that could handle this. It also, in our opinion, it's something that had a historical use in this same vein, although quite a bit different and quite a long time ago. But it also provides we recognize that there are other uses around the property, but with the order of trees, which would not get disturbed here, we feel that it provides a buffer level between our operation there across the street. We also feel that it's a relatively minimal use. I won't speak for the town of Baraboo, but I will say that we did go both to the Planning Commission and the Town Board of Baraboo, and they did approve the acknowledgement form on this. They can state there's members that may wish to speak from there, but they did, their concerns were that it in fact be not open to private owners, private operation, that it would be only operated by the city, and then also that odor be controlled.
Okay.
that it's going to be inside. All of the waste and all of the recyclables on the site will always be, there will be no outside dumping in order to reduce any opportunity for trash to blow or anything to migrate around on the site. Everything will be enclosed. No. Veolia operate in a fashion where they are required to clean up or dump and empty their compactor on a daily basis. There's garbage on the floor down there all the time. They don't hose down their floors. It would not be at all comparable to that. I believe it would be minimal. I don't know how I could describe the level that you might be experienced, but my feeling is that it would be minimal. Any contact water that would have any opportunity to be in contact with any of the refuse or the washdown water be collected into a holding tank for leachate, pumped out, and hauled to the city's wastewater treatment plant. There will be one trailer always sitting backed up to the compactor at that location, and there will not be otherwise. They will come, they will swap that trailer out with the next trailer that they use for the next load. So there will be a trailer sitting against the building in a dock station that would be backed up to the compactor, and that will be there until it's full, and then when it gets hauled out, they will back another one in its place. They will not be stored there. They're stored at the city service center. The truck where its interface with the compactor will be sealed, so there will not be an opportunity for open air for rodents. I can't tell you there's not going to be any flies, but because of the fact that we daily will be compacting it into the trucks, we believe that to be minimal.
According to, I guess I don't quite get how you back a trailer up to the compactor if it's on the side of the building and you don't have any surface there.
They would come in here, mm-hmm. They would drive to here, they would back into the building on what would be the west end of the building.
So the trailer would be in the building as well.
The trailer will be sitting over here on the outside of the building this is like a two-tiered operation where if you look at your, and I don't know if there's a cross-section that very well describes it in the application, but the inside building wall, there'll be a push-off wall. This building just be an open building on a slab with a mm-hmm. divider to keep the garbage and the recyclables separated. But inside the wall, then there'll be like a jersey wall barrier that they would push off to, and then they will dump over into the compactor, which is accessible from the inside of the building,
mm-hmm.
and then it would get pushed out into the truck, which is parked outside of the building in a dock. That,
to the south of the compactor.
The truck will be on the east, would be parked on the east side of the building. So any backing and any other operation will be screened also by the building being the garbage trucks backing into the building. They'll be on the other side of the building from the residents as they back into the building. The thought was there that if in fact the operation, there's always what level do you build for? Right now we have 3,700 residential units in the city of Baraboo, but obviously if it grows over time and we don't have the space in the building for both garbage and refuse, we would then construct the recycling building, again, to keep everything fully enclosed and to keep that separation. At this point, we wouldn't start with that. It could be either a function of the approval as shown, or it could be, you know, we could be required to come back for approval on that at some point if we needed to in the future. That is a drainage culvert to take water from one side of the driveway to the other.
Is the possible recycling building simply a flexion point after you've sorted it within the main transfer building? Was that the idea, or
no?
You haven't kind of thought through the process of that one yet?
We don't have to sort. We don't do any sorting. It's all commingled, so it all gets loaded out and hauled out the way we collect it. It's all commingled, and the only intention was there is if we did not have enough room long term to store recycles, because they're two different truckfuls that go, and if we didn't have enough room in the building to handle that, this way we would have it enclosed in a building. Then when it came time, that would also get loaded out of that building in an end loader, carried into the transfer station building, dumped into the compactor, and packed into the trucks.
So you don't separate out recyclables?
No.
You don't
have
somebody to take them?
That's kind of interesting to me as well, but nowadays, in fact, it seems to be more the trend. There's more commingled recycle collection.
And you said it's two garbage trucks per day. Is that, and on how many trips? For just one trip per each?
One trip per each. One trip of garbage per day, one trip of recycles per day. That is on the property that we own. That site is leased to the town of Baraboo, and it's operated entirely by the town of Baraboo, and is totally separate from this.
Are there any test wells on the, this is for the landfill, are there test wells on that?
There are monitoring wells around that, on and around that property, that have been monitored since its closure in 1981 and are still being monitored on a quarterly basis. That part of the reason, I believe, also for the closure back in the 80s was that the existing landfill was showing to be polluting the groundwater. The city of Baraboo actually installed a water line along the east side of County Trunk A, and the residents on the east side of A are on city water.
Okay. I'm just wondering if based on the city's experience with the existing landfill, what, if any, effect the stormwater management area might have as far as on, it doesn't increase the amount of rainwater.
No, and it's down gradient. It is down gradient. Mm-hmm. We don't see, frankly, there's no water going off that site right now, and there won't be any water going off that site in the future, so it really should not impact.
I do. Glenn Herndon, address E11891 Side Road, Baraboo. Well, is number one, is this special exception just for the area where this transfer station will be, or is it the complete old landfill site? If it's for the complete old landfill site, does this open ways for additional groups or whatever to come in to use the area? And you know, the engineer says there'd be no waste, no, all the liquid will be transported into a tank, but that seems very good, but I just see some waste. And also, they didn't indicate, but I think they propose to compact just the solid waste from the 11,000 population of Baraboo, and that can't all be solid waste. It'd be some liquid. And me, that is almost impossible to collect all this liquid. And the other thing, as he mentioned, number of wells were polluted. City water is trend is through on the east side of A, but not all residents are on the city water. And if this liquid is accidentally it's into the surface, is this possibly pollute remaining wells? And I guess my next thing is, why does this transfer station have to be in the country, not in the city? Why couldn't they put it behind the old city shops off of Potter Street or in the old city shops where they have access to the sewer, city sewage, where they wouldn't have to transport it? I'm assuming when they transport it, they can put it into the sewer system in the city anyhow. Well, that's about all I have. Yes, I do. I live approximately 1 mile northeast of the old dump. And odor, you can't contain it in the building, I don't think. You can put it in there, but it's not going to stay. And I can go a little further. If there is any odor, the prevailing southwest winds brings it right in my backyard. And I can say that currently I get, when there's a moderate breeze blowing, I get a smell of diesel exhaust, which I don't know where it comes from. The only place it could possibly be is where there's a group of diesel trucks or some diesel-operated system that's possibly making asphalt. I call it, the odor is there during the asphalt season. It comes in, and I did go to the city. I went to the county. Their comments was, close your windows, turn the air conditioner on. I didn't have an air conditioner. Well, anyway, this is my 2 cents worth. Thank you.
Yes, I do. My name is Jerry Wershak, and I'm going to speak on behalf of my dad, George. My dad bought the property on Trapshoot and County A approximately 22 years ago with the intention of moving to Baraboo at that time, but with health and other reasons, he just decided against it. He passed on the property to my granddaughter, to his granddaughter, who is deciding to build a residence there one of these days, and maybe in the short future. But I've had a couple of concerns with this transfer station. Number one, I know that County A is a shortcut between Baraboo and Wisconsin Dells. So a lot of people use that area to drive from Baraboo to Wisconsin Dells back and forth. And the other reason is, the other thing that occurs on County A also is that I had a personal experience with this myself. It's a main road for ambulances to the hospital here in Baraboo. My wife a while back had a mishap in Wisconsin Dells, and that was the route that they took to get her to the hospital. And I'm concerned with garbage traffic, with everything that goes on County A, that it's a nice, clean, and safe roads to maneuver people into that hospital area. And the other thing too is also that, you know, I never knew that the city owned a piece of property there, and it was a landfill at one time. Well, in Chicago, I know I had a couple of buildings in Chicago, and every time I was able to sell that building, I had to go through EPA, and one of the buildings had to be dug up completely and cleaned out from oil and debris, and everything had to be cleaned out before a developer came in and built a new project on that land. So I'm concerned with that too. I mean, the landfill was there. I'm sure there is spillage from that landfill. I think it should be cleaned up before anything gets built, done, or anything gets done on that piece of property. Clean it up and then maybe build, I guess. I'm not for building anything there. I think it's a rural area. I think it should stay a rural area. And there's residences there. It's architecture. I mean, it's got agriculture in that area, and it should stay the way it is. And I don't think the city should go in that direction at all. I think there's other sites. I mean, sites that could be looked at in the area here. I've been coming to Baraboo for, like I say, over 20 years, and I like this area, and that's why we bought the land here, and I'd like to stay here. That's my concern. Well, in Chicago, I know that, let's say, if you have, if you're doing work with chemicals, or if you're doing contact cement, or any type of lacquer thinners, or paint, or mixing chemicals, and you're doing it in a building, and the city comes in and the EPA comes in and basically says that you have to clean out and go down a certain amount of feet below the foundation before a new developer could come in and build anything on that site. So in other words, they want to clean out that area completely before a new condominium complex or a new building or another building goes up. They want that area completely clean. And I don't know what the rules and regulations are in Baraboo person. I think if you're going to be building something or just putting up a new structure on a piece of property, I think actually it's a government law. I'm pretty sure it's got to do with the EPA is a government entity here, and it should be cleaned up.
If using your example, if you had you had your business in the city, and you know that if you're going to redevelop that, you have to dig down a certain amount to get rid of the an adjacent lot had a building that there was no question that there was any issues with it, would they have to reclaim their property as well?
If they're going to be developing something, if that other piece of property next to me is going to be selling, and the new owners are going to be developing the property in the same manner like the individual who bought my property is, yes, they are required to do the same thing to their property if they find any chemical spillage or anything underneath their property.
Comes in, that's the environmental hazards report. Right. Yeah. What I'm suggesting, though, is if you're going to use your analogy, from what we know from this proposal, is the location of the transfer station is off the site of the old landfill. And so, we have to, understand your concerns, but I'm trying to make the comparison, equal.
Yeah, I'm sure there could be, with landfills, there's spillage. I mean, there's an underground, rain coming down,
sure.
It moves. I know I'm just going to give you one example before I sit down. I bought a piece of property in Chicago, and there was a tank, just a regular tank, empty oil tank, underneath the building that they kept for heating at one time or another. I had to dig it out completely, and it cost quite a bit of money to do it. I mean, at that time, And EPA came in and supervised the digging of this and the cleanup, the complete cleanup. So I'm just concerned with this, too, to a certain degree. And the other thing, too, is it's a rural area. Let's keep it the same way.
Okay.
Yes, I do. My name is Lisa Zimmerman, and I live at S3986 Highway 8. And I live right across the street from the proposed site. Okay. First thing I want to say, I have a few things I want to say, but the first thing is I totally understand where the city wants Viola out of the city, because it's a mess, it stinks, and I can't imagine that their new proposed site would be any different. I'm sure the people that do business, which most of them are commercial businesses around there, would try their best to keep a minimum amount of smell and rats and, you know, all those other things also. And that just hasn't happened. I mean, it smells, it stinks, and they do want to get rid of it. But I do think that there are other proposed sites. Like the gentleman here had said before, you know, what's wrong with the waste site that the city already owns? And they already have. Why wouldn't that be a better site? I want to talk a little bit about the pre-existing dump site and what happened there. We bought our property about 10 years, well, it's going to be 10, 11 years ago. And prior to that, they had the well, and the water was contaminated from the previous site. And some of you are probably more knowledgeable about what that is. But we did have existing test wells on our property. The city did come in. There were issues of people's health being, you know, affected by the water. And the city did come in, and they did extend the water down to the end of Trapshoot Road, so we currently have city water. But we do have the test wells. A couple years ago, we had two test wells on our property. A couple years ago, the DNR came out. They're the ones that are monitoring the site and the situation of contamination. And they came in and they filled one of those wells. Okay. What's going on with the rest of the property and the rest of the property owners, or how far that damaged or what that damage is, I don't know. But I know they still are watching it. And I would just hate for, you know, something else to come in there and make the situation, you know, worse, or, you know, have that same thing happen. In regards to what the gentleman from the city said, and, you know, that they're only being two trucks a day, I find that really, first, really hard to believe that there would be only two trucks a day. I don't know how many times that anyone is just saying that will only be there, you know, dropping once a day. I just find that really hard to believe, because there's a lot of garbage, and I know for a fact that our garbage man, it's kind of ironic, actually, because we live on Adair, we were having an issue with Viola. I live in the town of Fairfield, but they pick up our garbage also, and we were having a problem with the garbage man coming too early in the morning, like, you know, before 6 o'clock, when, you know, people normally aren't putting their garbage out, and He was coming on our road. I called and I complained a couple times, and they said, well, the reason we want to come early like that, the reason the driver was coming early like that, is because there's so much traffic on your road out in front of where you are, because our property is like on the corner of Crawford and A, and it's just super busy area. So the garbage man was trying not to, you know, pick up garbage there because the road was so busy. But they did make arrangements, they worked it out, and I know just on our route alone, the garbage truck goes back and forth and dumps his load, you know, more than once, just picking up the garbage in our area. So, you know, only having two trucks a day being filled like that, I find that just really difficult to believe that that would happen. And then the other thing about the traffic, just a little bit about our neighborhood. Out there on Highway A, like I said, we live on the corner of Crawford, and that's the main thoroughfare between people that live out in Bentry and any way to the west. If they want to go to Portage or Madison, they go down Crawford, come down A. A is now called Interstate A, I've been told numerous times. And they come down 8 and they, you know, take that shortcut over to Madison. Or now with the roundabout there on Highway 12, they don't like to go that way. It's not as fast. So they go up A and then go to the Dells, but it's very heavily traveled. And on Crawford Street, as well as A, there's a lot of foot traffic. There's a lot of people driving. There's a lot of kids that ride their bikes to school, people that walk and drive in that area. There's no shoulder on the road there on Crawford Street. The speed limit was changed to 35, you know, because of the traffic. There's absolutely no shoulder, and when the kids come from school, right at the middle school, they come right up Crawford Street and come down, and that's how they, you know, and even teachers, even, because they work at the school, so even teachers, that's the way you exit the school, and you come right down Crawford. So my concern is if you're adding, you know, garbage trucks, you know, coming and going on that street, you know, how dangerous is that going to be? And I know if there were issues in the past where the traffic was bad on those roads, then they did change the speed limits, and there was actually death on that road and injuries. And I can't even tell you, I mean, the DOT probably knows, or I don't know, the sheriff's department, I don't know, but how many accidents there are there on the corner of Crawford and A. I'd say there's at least 2 accidents I see every month, whether they be minor fender benders or exactly what it is, but the traffic is just unbelievable. On my property, where my property is across the street, when I look to the north towards the Dell, it's almost like a line kind of intersection there on the road where the cars come up kind of over the knoll and you can't, you know, you don't see them till the last minute. It's pretty dangerous pulling out of there. In fact, the school bus driver that, you know, picks up the students there says it's one of the most dangerous places. And I would, you know, tell my kids are 8 or 10 years old, I would go out and I'd, you know, walk them up to the school bus because I was afraid of them getting hit. So, the other thing that I just want to mention is about the long-term effects of this. Right now, in the town of Fairfield, that area that I live, it's been designated residential, and they allow for cottage industry. But there's been a few people that are in the line there. Because it is such a heavy traffic area, it kind of leads itself that it could possibly be a commercial use, you know, heading down on A just outside of town. Well, you know, they had gone to the Fairfield Town Board and asked, you know, to have like a sporting goods store or something like that right along that. That line, we were always told no, that we're gonna, the long-term plan of the county is to maintain, you know, residence or agricultural use between Baraboo and the Dell, that it's not going to be built up like Highway 12 is. And my concern is this, is right now we have the trap chute in our backyard, and if across the street we have a recycling center, who's going to want to live there? You know, is that... is that going to be the best use of our property? I am a licensed, I don't practice, I'm a licensed real estate appraiser, and I don't think that the land value is going to go down, but as far as it being marketable, I mean, it's definitely going to make a difference. I mean, who's going to want to live between the trap chute in your backyard and a recycling center in your front? So I guess what this gets down to me, is really, what does the county want to see there? I mean, it's more than just about the recycling center. It's about what do you want, you know, Baraboo to look like going to the north. I mean, do you want to have commercial buildings there? Because, you know, if this is just one thing that's going to, you know, start the snowballing, because the highest and best use of our property is not going to be residential. Yeah, across, you know, like I say, if across the street we have this transfer station, and in the back we have this the trap chute. You know, it's not the view of a few buildings. I mean, we live with agricultural buildings and barns and houses. I mean, it's not about the view. It's about the smell, the stink, the rats, the traffic, but it's going to change the traffic. You know, it's not about the view. It's not an issue of the view. I mean, if I sit out my yard and look down, I could see it. You know, in the front, I could see it. But like I said, it isn't so much about the view, it is about the use. And, you know, what do we want the city to look like? What do we want Fairfield to look like, you know? And I just don't want to be put in a position where, you know, that goes there and, you know, we're stuck with a residential use because, you know, it's not the highest and best use of our property then.
You said you've lived there for 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Fanshoot, a little over 10.
Fanshoot was there when you bought the property.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just comment the way
sure.
You just reminded me of something? The other thing is the hours. You know, the trap shoots between certain hours, and sometimes they're long, you know, in the evening. But like you said, we moved there when the trap shoot was there, so we knew that that was there. But as far as, you know, trucks hauling and the garbage, I mean, are there going to be any limits to the days and operations of use?
There was no recommendations from the township. Did they have any hearings, or did you appear at anything with the township?
No, actually, I don't get the Baraboo paper, and I kind of heard this from my parents, and they're like, I don't know the way it was worded in the paper. I'm not really sure if this is, you know, across from you guys or where this is. And I was here at the last hearing, but we never, in the town of Fairfield, we never received notice, you know, any notice that this was happening. It was across the street from our house. And we did last week receive notice, and I did talk to a few of my neighbors. Most of the people that live across the street are, you know, younger people. We all work during the day. They had a difficult time coming here. You know, not sure of the process, not sure if, you know, you can write a letter or exactly, you know, have somebody else bring it, but they're working. So.
I do. Randy Quickhammer, S 5828 Lehman Road, Baraboo. I'm representing the town of Baraboo. And I was alarmed that you hadn't received the town acknowledgement form, so I went and picked it up quick because the town board did act on it.
There a recommendation on that?
Yeah. There was a confusion between our clerk when Mr. Bongard came and presented it. Our clerk understood he was going to pick it up. And so that's why when I heard that, I called her quick and went and picked it up. And we addressed as it was presented to us. And from what I heard, the same as Mr. Bongard presented it here today to you here. And so the two main issues we put down was the odor control and no private operation. We didn't want to see this turned over down the road to a private entity, and also the fact that, as Mr. Bongard and the city presents this, that it is for their city household pickup only. In fact, he told us it wouldn't be the commercial because that is contracted out, that only that garbage would be coming into the site, that there wouldn't be contracting done to bring in any outside refuse from other companies or contractors, because that was not, that's not what's being presented here.
Was the town satisfied that the measures the city's taking to control odor were adequate?
Every question that we asked him, he seemed to have an answer as far as any leachate. They were going to be collecting it. There would be the building, he said, when the proposal was so that it could be washed down on a routine basis. And there again, the leachate will be collected where they do have the facility. They can haul it off site and have it treated. So they say we presented those questions, and he did seem to have answers that they have been addressing this through the engineering aspect of this proposal. But again, our concerns were that the RMF
the odor, you know, outside garbage. And the way it was presented to us, it would be very limited activity out there whatsoever. And we just wanted to make sure that on their special exception, it is listed as that so it stays that way and doesn't curtail into something else later. I don't live next to one of these facilities, so I don't know. I know, I guess from a farming aspect, ag aspect, if you generate control and you get a concerned neighbor or something, you take action on it. And so, therefore, we felt somewhat assured that the city was going to try and address this in the forefront on their building needs and so forth, and they were going to have the facility was going to be in such a manner that they were going to be able to remedy these and tackle these challenges as they arose.
Anyone else would like to appear as interest may appear? But in any of the three categories, that will close public hearing.
I guess I have concerns, try not to put my personal feelings, but I wouldn't want it next to me. There's residents on, three residents within 500 feet on the north, and there's residents to the east within 500 feet, and garbage says no. I guess I would be concerned of a health hazard of the flies and the garbage.
I'm a little bit assured on this.
We also have, I mean, designed right into it is the storage tank for to allow them to hose it down on a frequent basis. So they, it's not like they've, with the intention, they're not just saying they're going to do something. They actually have a design that accommodates, that backs up what they're talking about doing. The other issue would be some of the concerns that are brought up. I mean, part of, I guess, the reality of this situation is the city has an interest in making this thing work. The permit's for 5 years, so if it's not working, the city's taking a big chance that if there's odors and there's traffic issues that are concerned about, and I don't see the traffic issue with the volume of traffic that the city's talking about. But, you know, there's the permit's for 5 years. The city's making a big investment, and if it's not going to, if it's not panning out or they're not operating it responsibly, they may not get the permit to use it, to renew it. So. That's right. So with that, I'd make a motion to approve the special exception permit with the conditions that planning and zoning laid out.
I'll second it.
I move to adjourn.
Second.